Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. All eyes will be on the Fed this week as they meet to decide whether to cut interest rates. The outcome isn't necessarily the last big market event before the holidays, as critical labor market data will be released next week and a nominee for the new Fed chair could be announced. Equity markets are back near all-time highs, and investors are wondering if this Santa rally can continue. Joining us here today on this Monday morning to discuss this all from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas, Jason Dreho. Jason, good morning to you. Thank you for dropping by. Welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here.
So, Jason, before we get into the Fed, we are getting more economic data, although it is a bit dated. What is it saying about the state of the U.S. economy?
Well, we have, I think, most of the data we need or we'll get for September. We got spending data last week, also income data for September. That allows us to have a kind of complete picture for the data, you know, for the fourth quarter overall. The spending data in September, you know, was up a little bit over month on a real basis after you adjust for inflation. And then on a full quarter basis, some of the prior months had been revised lower, but it was still a solid 2.7% real spending growth, annually adjusted. So a good number overall. And that was the last key data point we needed to estimate or for the estimates of GDP for the third quarter. The Atlanta Fed has a third quarter GDP now tracking estimate. It's at about 3.6%. It's fluctuated around a little bit, but I think that's a reasonable expectation for what the data will be. Other economists are forecasting something around like 3 to 3.5%. When we look at other more recent data, because now we're into early December, so looking at September is a bit certainly backward looking. More recent data that we continue to get on the labor market data does show ongoing softness. Some alternative data measures from private sector data providers, not the government, suggest measures of layoffs have begun to kind of rise, which is a potential risk going forward. But other good news that we've gotten is on inflation. So we also got the September PC inflation. It came in a little bit softer than expected, to 20 basis points month over month, annualizing to just over 2.8%. There was also moderation in core services ex housing. It's down to 20 basis points month over month, after rising 30 basis points the prior 2 months. That particular measure, core services ex housing inflation, is sort of if you strip out potential impacts for tariffs on goods, where the tariffs will mostly apply to goods, not to services. The fact that core services, once you take out shelter, is relatively contained is a positive sign that underlying inflation pressures remain moderate. The shelter inflation has also been trending lower. Combined, that is roughly 60-65% of the overall inflation basket. So if that's kind of going lower, once some of the tariff-related impact on goods inflation alleviates, then I think the outlook for inflation going forward is better. So in a nutshell, what we have is an economy that continues to sort of, be resilient in growth. Consumer continues to spend, and again, credit card data we see, and we got for over the Thanksgiving long weekend indicates consumers continue to spend. So the story that official story that we have through September suggests a resilient economy, consumer holding up, labor market softness, inflation going lower, low recession risk. That still remains the picture that we have going into the end of the year.
Okay, so with that backdrop, Jason, let's now turn over to the Fed. The markets at this point pricing in for a high probability of a cut at this upcoming meeting. Aside from that, Jason, what are you watching out for from the Fed?
Well, you mentioned high probability. The market's at about a 95% probability the Fed will cut, but it's also widely expected that it's going to be a hawkish cut. Now, the case for the cut, I think, is relatively solid. I alluded to the fact that the economy overall is growing resilient, the consumption is good, but labor market softness persists. And right now it looks like job growth is not keeping up with labor supply, and that's contributed to the unemployment rate rising, for the last few months in a row up to 4.4%. Again, that's through September. We've had some softness in October, November, which the Fed doesn't have that data yet when they will make the decision on Wednesday. If it goes higher, then that's a further sign that they need to be sort of somewhat aggressive in moving towards, cutting rates, normalizing policy to back to sort of a neutral rate. So the case for cutting sort of makes sense. the case for also being somewhat hawkish, and that the perception, is also somewhat justified, given that inflation is still well above 2%. It's also maybe necessary for Powell to appease certain committee members who will likely dissent again, and so he might say things such as during the press conference that explaining the views of other participants who opposed to cut, where they're thinking. In October at the FOMC press conference, he did make the statement also that further cuts are not are far from a guarantee. He could say something along those lines. If we look to last year, recall that they cut 50 basis points in September, then once 25 each in October and December. And then in the press conference in December, Powell kind of guided the fact that it'll probably take a bit of a pause. So they could do something similar to that this year, or in a statement from the, or an expression from the FOMC statement last December, where it was the extent and timing of additional adjustments, will be assessed, which the market would interpret as they're going to take a bit of a pause. So there's reasons they could be hawkish, but there's also limits to how hawkish they could actually be. The Fed would never want to, rule out definitively a cut in January. They also just don't have a lot of the data that would be necessary to make a decision of whether they would cut in January or not. On the 16th, so next week, we will get the October and November payrolls numbers. We'll only get November unemployment rates. Then in early January, we will get the December payrolls, which will be kind of the cleanest measure of where the labor market is after the government shutdown and other distortions. So the Fed will have essentially 3 months of labor market data plus other spending and consumer data, other inflation data before they make that decision at the end of January. So given how the data plays out and where the economy is, they may well feel they need to cut or not. So if they want to leave all options on the table, it limits to how kind of hawkish they could be. Other things to sort of look for along those lines is how do they update the dot plot. So there could be some committee members who don't officially dissent, but kind of leave their dots at implying there would have been two cuts this year, not the three that actually took place. So that could be a way of sort of silently dissenting. The dot plot could remain at the median dot could remain at only one cut for next year rather than more aggressive cuts. So again, implying that it'll slow down from here. In terms of updated economic projections, it's likely that growth for this will be taken up just because the data that we've had since September indicates the economy was stronger than was assumed. They may take up next year a little bit. The inflation picture looks better than expected or better than maybe they feared back 3 months ago. So the inflation could actually be improved. So all told, it suggests that their economic projections could be a little bit better on growth, a little bit better on inflation. It's also why the need to cut more aggressively also at least next year won't be there, and that might be more the signal to they just need to be cautious at this point in time, like inflation still is above target. So a lot of things to look for beyond the cuts, but in some sense, given the market setup is for a hawkish cut, the bar is pretty high for Powell to out hawk the market, given the flexibility they're likely to want to retain.
So, Jason, it's interesting. If we turn to the markets are rallying on rate cut hopes, but there's also this idea of running it hot that seems to be supporting the rally. What is this idea of running it hot, Jason?
So running hot is kind of a scenario or maybe a narrative that's been floated in the market certainly for a while. I think it's something that I've written about and we've talked about on podcasts earlier this fall. Well, the idea that ultimately you sort of run the economy hot, meaning you allow or you try to get growth higher, nominal growth higher, nominal GDP higher, with policy being supportive. And that's kind of a U.S. story, certainly, but I think there's elements of that are applicable kind of globally with other central banks, other policymakers around the world. A simple thing is, if you're President Trump and you're looking at the midterms next year, you want a strong economy going into the midterms, it's probably easier to get growth higher through different policy measures than it is to get inflation lower or affordability solved in just in 12 months, because that's more of a supply side story. By running it hot, you can also have the Fed cut rates more aggressively, and certainly that's been the thought that under a new Fed chair that Trump would nominate, this person would also look to cut rates kind of somewhat aggressively, allowing the economy to kind of grow faster. You might get other policy measures that are supportive for growth from the Trump administration, such as maybe lowering tariffs. If the tariff, the IEEPA tariffs are struck down by the Supreme Court, would they perhaps be more measured in the reimposing tariffs as a way to implicitly create some sort of tax cuts. We also know that the One Big Beautiful Bill Act will start to kick in with benefits by Q1, later Q1, as tax refunds are likely to go higher because some of those tax cuts on the personal side are retroactive this year. So we're going to see a bit of a burst in growth, or should see some kind of acceleration in growth kind of relative early next year at the same time the Fed is cutting. So all these things are going to suggest this idea of kind of running hot, where growth accelerates, it's elevated. Inflation is still above 2%. Expectations are it will come down, but maybe at a slower pace if you're running the economy hot. The real risk to this scenario in some way is if bond yields don't cooperate. And already, we've seen bond yields kind of tick up a little bit. There is concerns ultimately that the economy is overheating and that the Fed and other central banks can't cut rates. In fact, they might have to pivot to a point where they have to even consider rate hikes or becomes more balanced. Rate volatility go higher, that would certainly be disruptive for the markets. But for the time being, the markets are treating this as a sort of relatively benign scenario of good growth, accelerate higher nominal GDP. That's certainly positive for equities. And that's kind of what the narrative that's taking place in the markets right now.
So with that, Jason, how is this view being reflected in market performance? And what should investors be doing right now in the way of positioning?
So we know that equity markets overall, and like U.S. equity markets, are close, or near all-time highs. But what is noteworthy is that, the performance in equity markets in the U.S. is broadening out. You're seeing equal weight indices outperforming, or at least holding their own against large cap or the market cap weighted S&P 500. Small caps are kind of picking up. Cyclical stocks are kind of leading some of this recovery. So there's a bit of a broadening out that's occurring because if investors have more confidence about the overall macro environment and certainly on a relative basis, a little more questions or cautions about the AI thesis, then you can see this kind of broadening out. I think that's one story that's reflective of this. Interest rates going higher is another aspect of this story. If we look at it last week, rates across the curve were up about 10 basis points over the prior 5 days, like most of last week. But it's also been led by real rates, more so than inflation expectations going higher. So it may be consistent with the market thinking that if you run it hot, that it's less scope for aggressive rate cuts later on. There were also kind of along those lines reports that with Kevin Hassett's name being sort of floated as a likely Fed nominee, there are also subsequent reports that the feedback from senior Wall Street officials or bankers and investors was that a little concerned that if Hassett does get nominated, that he will look to cut rates aggressively. Again, sort of running the hot narrative. And so I think that was a factor in terms of the markets pushing back on that, but suggesting that perhaps the markets will force any new Fed chair's hand to not cut rates too aggressively. But other parts of the market, sort of consistent with this kind of running hot narrative, as you're seeing some commodities and copper as an example of really accelerating your break-even inflation expectations, for example, in Japan, that is also sort of engaging in some expansionary fiscal policy. You can see that kind of picking up. So that is sort of what the market's doing overall. In terms of how should investors position for this, ultimately, I think this is consistent with our outlook for 2026. In which we see good upside for equities, first predicated on the economy growth being resilient, like growth likely accelerating, yet inflation is coming down, and you have a Fed that will be cutting rates. That is a conducive macro environment to equities going higher. We still think AI, the thesis, has good runway. There's definitely been some questions and challenges in the marketplace about aspects of the spending and infrastructure layer. But we see opportunities kind of across the board, and particularly in some more application layers, that would also provide sort of almost a broadening out to other sectors, whether it's financials, healthcare, sort of implicitly kind of benefiting from that. In terms of fixed income, the risk that rates could rise is one of the reasons why we continue to like more the intermediate part of the curve, like the 5 to 7 year, not extending your duration too significantly. And ultimately, if you're running it hot, credit can do fine in that case. But if you're having high nominal GDP growth, it's better to take, in our view, kind of the exposure, the risk through equities, that kind of adjust for that versus bonds, which more of a nominal asset class that will be negatively impacted by higher inflation overall in terms of real after-tax returns. So those are some of the ideas we like, including commodities, which we think will will benefit from this overall environment kind of globally.
Well, appreciate the positioning guidance. As always, Jason, it will be an interesting couple of days ahead, accounting for the economic data releases. Of course, the FOMC meeting, I'm sure we'll cover these outcomes during our next conversation next week. In the meantime, Jason, wish you a great week ahead and look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.